And if you would read that, we'll take it up.
1254, accept report from the Urban Renewal Area Amendment Advisory Committee.
Let's see who is here to present this. Jillian Detweiler, of all people. She'll turn your microphone on. There you go.
Thank you. So I had the pleasure of being a non-voting facilitator of the Advisory Committee on the Urban Renewal Area Amendments. And given the hour, what I'd like to do is keep my comments very brief and allow committee members and the interested public who wish to speak to this item. Our purpose of bringing it today was to do just that, to start fleshing out the issues so that when we bring amendments to you December 17th, you're kind of warmed up for that and we're addressing issues that hadn't been heard yet. So the committee met throughout the summer. Their recommendations to you are in the draft report. There was a lot of agreement. There were a few important minority positions that you'll hear from other committee members. In the coming weeks, we will get opinions from the Planning and Sustainability Commission and from the PDC board. And all of that then will be delivered to you December 17th. So with that, I think we have committee members lined up to speak. So if they would just come up and I'll get out of the way.
Okay, committee
and
members.
And then we have citizens.
And then we have citizens
up
as well. Okay, thank you, Jillian. So yeah, we will dispense with a lot of opening statements on my part, in fact, all of them, and get committee members up here right away. You're welcome. And if we don't have enough chairs for all of you, we'll take you in waves. Good afternoon. Go ahead. Just push the button on that little portable mic there and on the base of it there. There you go.
There we go. Great. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is John Talaska, Multnomah County Economic Development, and I'm here because I was the county's representative.
Just a little closer.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm here because I was the representative from Multnomah County on the Urban Renewal Area Amendment Advisory Committee, one of the longest committee names ever. thank you for the opportunity to serve on the committee and to be here before you today to give you comments regarding the report. First and foremost, as you well know, when it comes to urban renewal, process matters. And I say this because under Oregon's property tax system, as we all know, urban renewal ends up diverting resources from local taxing jurisdictions and school districts, and that's precisely why process is so important, so that the jurisdictions like the county and school districts that will end up losing resources have the opportunity to actually be heard and a chance to speak up and inform the decisions. Last May, when City Council passed the resolution, you all provided clear guidance for the committee. It's very focused that we should focus on recommending, the committee should come up with recommendations for URA boundaries for the six URAs under consideration. And with, by and large, the committee did that with one exception that I want to focus on. I'm referring, as you may imagine, to the recommendation to add Block 33 out of Old Town Chinatown into the River District. As the report reflects, I opposed that addition. River District has the largest concentration of resources out of any URA within the city. And as such, it's of course understandable why any property owner would want their property included within River District. And quite frankly, there are lots of really good reasons to add any given property into River District or into any URA for that matter. But again, this is where I come back to process matters. All of the discussions regarding the changes, and particularly having to do with River District, the guidance from council, the direction from staff and to the committee, we're focused on identifying which blocks should be removed from River District to achieve the goals set out by council. It wasn't until during the meeting, in the, I believe it was the third meeting, that the some committee members brought up and the committee began discussing the possibility of expanding River District. Given the unique nature of River District, that it's got more resources than anywhere else, if I think that if last spring, Mr. Mayor, if you had come to Multnomah County and said one of the things you were considering was expanding River District, or if last May when y'all were considering and deliberating over the changes, if y'all had mentioned expanding River District, I would wager a fair amount that the public discussion would have been very different than over the idea of contracting it, that it's a, that would be something that would draw a lot of interested people. And so while I'm not saying that any of the proposed expansions, that expanding into that block has no value, my concern is around process. And to be really clear, of course, expanding one block into River District is not going to have a material financial impact on the county. The concern is that doing that would simply not be consistent with the idea of valuing process and transparency, which is something that I know is important to the City Council. And I think that is also something that's critical in urban renewal decisions when it comes to taxing jurisdictions and stakeholders. And so that's why I'm going to, my concern with the report and what I urge you to do is to not expand River District to include Block 33. And lastly, I want to say I realize that I focused on this one relatively small issue, and I don't want that to color my overall experience or feelings about the process. Quite frankly, I think the committee worked great. We communicated well together. We largely stayed focused on the task that you gave us. And I certainly support the balance of the recommendations.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well, I didn't gather from the report that it was more than the League of Women Voters who didn't support that. Can you tell me what the vote was?
I don't know what the vote was. Perhaps I'm wrong. I thought in the report that it said there was the representatives of the League in Multnomah County.
It says the majority of the committee supported the map of properties, and then just that the League of Women Voters representative would support removing more acreage. It actually doesn't even.
You'd have to look under downtown waterfront.
We have Debbie here, so.
Okay.
It's under the downtown waterfront section that it talks about.
You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, that's
it's late in the day.
You've had a busy one.
Thanks very much.
By the way, I just want to point something out. We have a chart that has the fiscal impact to taxing jurisdictions of what we're doing. And because you mentioned the importance of dialogue and collaboration with partners that are impacted by urban renewal. Let's also celebrate the fact that the city fully funded its commitment to the new health department and did not take a pro rata reduction after doing this. In fact, one could argue that you're getting a double benefit. We pre-funded a commitment we made through that spirit of collaboration, and there's also a return to the county. So I think it underscores the benefits of that collaborative approach.
Thank you. Yes, no. I think the city and county work well together around this.
Thank you very much. That was our goal. Appreciate it, John.
Michael. Good afternoon. I'm Michael Harrison, and I represented OHSU at several of the committee meetings. Thank you for letting us participate in the process. I feel we were able to work together as a group to achieve the city's priorities of continuing good job growth in the city, of quality jobs, returning significant funding back to taxing jurisdictions, and generating tax increment for affordable housing. Closer to home, the committee recommendations would generate funds the city could use to facilitate job growth in South Waterfront, specifically by extending Bond Avenue through our Schnitzer Research and Academic Campus. As a council, you were early supporters of the Night Challenge. And I'm happy to report that as of yesterday, we've raised more than $440 million to complement the night's $500 million matching gift. We're very optimistic with more than a year to go that we can raise the last $60 million. Our mission as an institution is to improve the health and well-being of Oregonians. And although that's not precisely an economic development strategy or mission, by doing our job well, we create jobs throughout the community. From time to time, I've come to council and sort of talked about jobs, but I'd like today to talk about some specific numbers just so you sort of know what you're getting through an investment of TIF. When fully staffed, the Knight Cancer Challenge will allow us to hire over 380 new direct employees at OHSU and will result in almost 500 additional non-OHSU jobs for the local economy. In addition to these jobs, city support for South Waterfront also facilitates the growth of our clinical services, which will mean approximately 850 additional OHSU employees in South Waterfront by 2020. While we're still determining the exact staff mixes, OHSU has a proven track record of producing quality jobs, jobs that will be even more accessible once the Tillicum Crossing opens and rapid transit extends east out the Division Powell corridor. According to Echo Northwest, the average wage for OHSU employees was over $76,000 in 2012, compared to a statewide average of roughly $44,000. The jobs OHSU indirectly creates in the economy also pay greater than average wages. A quarter of our existing 14,000 jobs have a fairly low barrier to entry, in many cases requiring an associate's degree or less, perhaps a certificate. With such positions as pharmacy tech or medical assistant, OHSU job growth is positioned to help Portlanders from all backgrounds achieve stable careers. Jobs aside, I also sit on the South Portland Neighborhood Association, and while I'm not representing them here today through that role, I have heard significant support for further extending the Greenway, something that extending the life of the North Macadam Urban Renewal Area could help facilitate. Thank you for considering the recommendations.
Thanks for your help. Ms. Iona.
I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. We appreciate that Council is rethinking Portland's urban renewal areas and giving us the opportunity to elaborate on our objections and concerns set forth in the Advisory Committee report. This proposal has been presented as a package deal. We disagree with this approach. Each URA should be reassessed on its own terms. It is misleading to suggest that districts are interlinked and that there is an overall benefit to be achieved by doing this as a package deal. The savings primarily result from ending certain districts, including the education URA, but other amendments will increase the cost to taxing jurisdictions. The River District proposal would remove about 30% in assessed value. While this sounds like a lot, the actual impact on the affected taxing jurisdictions is very small. The proposed amendment will return only about $5.4 million collectively to the taxing jurisdictions in 2015-16. The city would have only $1.5 million more to spend on citywide services, the county $1.4 million. These are insignificant sums in comparison to the $32.6 million River District captured in 2013-14 alone. Although PDC may be contractually committed to a number of projects, we recommend that additional acres be released from the district. We believe it is inappropriate for the county and schools to continue to pay for all of the planned projects through tax increment financing. We ask council to consider whether it would make more sense to reduce the district even more and use the city's portion of the savings to continue the work. The North Macadam proposal is a sensible solution for addressing the inappropriate creation of the education URA and the desire to support the university district's vitality. Once the amendment is approved, the League urges PDC and the city to stay true to the objectives within the existing North Macadam boundaries. It is a complex district with many challenges and needs ongoing PDC involvement. Our primary concern in this district relates to the affordable housing goals and achievements. The council-adopted South Waterfront Plan calls for a district that is diverse and inclusive with a mix of incomes that generally reflects the diversity found in the city as a whole. According to the draft North Macadam Urban Renewal Plan report, to date over 4,000 residential units have been built. Of those, 209 are affordable to households earning less than 60% of median family income. Had the city carried out its policy of meeting the income profile of the city as a whole, there would be over 1,500 units affordable to households in that income range. If housing set-aside dollars are not sufficient, we challenge City Council to find whatever additional resources are needed to meet the district housing goals. These concerns extend to the River District urban renewal area as well. The Central East Side Amendment would add 16 acres to fund streets and sidewalks around the new light rail station and provide development assistance. Diverting funds from the county and schools for this purpose is an inappropriate use of urban renewal. Since the city owns a significant portion of the area, making it suitable for private development should be a manageable undertaking. The proposal further envisions using resources to subsidize additional private development on sites within the current boundaries. This district has been in existence since 1986. And in 2006 was extended 12 years. According to the proposed plan amendment, taxing jurisdictions will not see full recovery of their foregone revenue until halfway through the century. If the district were allowed to end in 2018, per the last amendment, the break-even point would occur in 2032-33. In light of the significant unmet needs in our community, it is difficult to justify extending the life of a district created in the 1980s for the purpose of installing transportation infrastructure and subsidizing private development. In short, we advocate the following: assess each URA on its own terms, release significantly more of the River District back to the taxing jurisdictions, achieve the affordable housing goals promised by Council in the South Waterfront Plan, and end the Central East Side URA after 32 years instead of extending it another five. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
So to clarify, you don't, the league does not support adding the block from the downtown waterfront to riverfront, and you don't support adding the triangle in the
right.
Central East Side.
Yes.
And I know we had one member of, maybe we have others from Central East Side here today, but we had, there was one member of the committee from the Central East Side. Do you remember whether that member was supportive of the proposed changes in the Central East Side?
That was Peter Finley Fry. I can't. Okay.
If you don't remember offhand, I'm sure we'll get testimony.
Sorry, right, yeah.
I appreciate very much your diligence over many, many years.
Oh, well, thank you. And one thing I just wanted to ask, did you get, there was the draft committee report that was what was on the auditor's website, you know, the link to the information was still draft, and you were supposed to get a revised version. I just wanted to make sure that you checked to see that you got that one. So
thank you.
We'll double check. Debbie, at the risk of it's late, can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
You've been kind enough to spend the afternoon with us. I want to
give you a great chance fun.
I give you an opportunity to address your thoughtful testimony. You and I had a respectful disagreement on the education URA, but as I said when I voted for it, I was persuaded in part because it would set aside $47 million for housing in an area that we had some significant resource challenges and tremendous opportunities to do some new construction and preservation, and that's because of the geography of that URA. In this approach, there's been an effort to, in the recasting of North McAdam to find a way to, in part, substitute for some of those lost dollars. And what's happened in the last 6 months is that the forecasts have changed a bit. And so as of today, it looks like there's as much as $40 million over the life of North Mac, if I read this correctly, that's available for housing. Is that so far so good?
Well, I'm not sure that I know the exact housing dollars, but yes, this is, I mean, just about a month or two ago, they redid the projections. And feel that it's going to be able to reach maximum indebtedness, something they didn't think before.
And it would be ungrateful on my part not to acknowledge that it keeps growing, and we're now up to about $40 million, and hope springs eternal. I hope it gets to 50.
Yeah.
We've also, there are two parcels which have been identified as potential opportunity sites for development. And the question I wanted to ask you is, You have put into your testimony a challenge that we find additional resources if necessary. And I think what you're alluding to is that the goals that were set, the revised goals, which were a reduced horizon, for 0 to 30, which is where the bulk of the need is currently, which means very poor individuals and households who are not going to be successful unless we have subsidies, because the housing requires typically the cost of the unit plus some kind of service or subsidy. and so the challenge, I think, is going to be how we subsidize the units. Now, historically, we've partnered with Home Forward to get Section 8 vouchers, and we project-based them. We've considered VASH vouchers project-based. But ultimately, we've had to scrounge to find those resources, because that's the only way we get to those units at 0 to 6, 0 to 30. So what is the challenge that you're issuing with respect to the amendments before us? So I appreciate the challenge, and I accept the challenge, and I think it's a great challenge. But how can we make that challenge stick with respect to the amendments that are before us?
Yeah, and I don't know if it happens through the amendment itself, if there's a way to, I mean, it's not watering down the goals for sure, and I would think also recommitting to...
On that point, let's just be clear.
Yes.
There's nothing before us about watering down the goals.
Well, the actual copy that you received, the North McAdam Urban Renewal Plan report, does have the watered-down housing goals, but I've been promised by Tracy Manning from the Housing Bureau that she is fixing that, and that will be replaced before you finally vote on it.
And that's what we've been advised as well.
Yes, so I'm confident that's going to happen.
By December 17th or whenever, there will be no dilution of those goals. There will be perhaps some commentary about the challenges of getting to those goals, but there will not be lowering them. But what effectively are you suggesting that we do, since we'll be voting on amendments?
Well, I think I would still like to see in this plan there were the compromise goals for the first, the first 3,000 units. I think that made sense. And then after we reached 3,000, the city was supposed to be meeting the income profile of the city as a whole. It would be great in this plan to recommit to that vision. And, I mean, I recognize that every dollar is not identified by a long shot. But, you know, there are efforts out there right now, the welcome home thing, the state, is coming up. So maybe there's in the next 10 years more resources will become available. But we've got to have in the plan that this is what we want to do.
Who knows, Debbie? We may even have one-time money available in a future budget.
Yes, right.
So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Start public testimony.
Why are you looking at me? Am I now the president? Am I the acting
president?
You are,
sorry.
Yeah. Well, I've heard enough. I'm ready to vote on this. And I think Debbie's suggestion is an amendment. Do I have a second?
Okay. Do we have more committee members?
Now we'll welcome the distinguished representative from the Portland Business Alliance to testify. Marion?
Hello, commissioners. My name is Marion Haynes. I'm with the Portland Business Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll be brief. Our understanding going into this process is that we had three goals. Our charge was threefold for this committee. One, to reduce the impact of urban renewal on taxing jurisdictions. Two, to preserve affordable housing investments and help the city better meet its redevelopment and economic development objectives. And three, to support PSU. With that in mind, and as background, PBA has long supported urban renewal as a tool. We think it's an important tool for the city. We have also long held that it is critical that the promise of urban renewal be fulfilled. And that does mean that eventually districts close down, properties return to overlapping taxing jurisdictions. In fact, in my last stint at the PBA in 2008, we were advocating at that time to close down some districts early, such as downtown Waterfront and South Park Blocks, in recognition of the need to fulfill that promise of urban renewal with higher value properties returned to the tax rolls. So with the three goals in mind, we had originally proposed moving some properties. It was initially more than the one block that is in the recommendations before you today, from downtown Waterfront to the River District. Not adding new properties into urban renewal, simply shifting a few blocks from one district to the other. and realized the importance of the process and getting to a consensus to the best that we could within the committee, we fully support the recommendation of just moving the one block 33 from downtown waterfront to the River District. In identifying that block, we looked at aligning the resources of existing districts with other proposed plans that the city has approved, such as the recently adopted PDC 5-year action plan for Old Town Chinatown. And Block 33 has long been viewed as a very catalytic development opportunity that could spur other private developments.
Marion, so, for people that are not conversant with our lingo, let's just describe that Block 33 is currently a parking lot.
Yes.
In the middle of Old Town Chinatown, in the middle of the Chinatown section of Old Town Chinatown, and it's
Correct.
Owned by a developer named David Galt.
Correct. It's
and once upon a time,
Davis.
And, yeah, once upon a time, it was the preferred location for an Awaja Maya development that never
Correct.
Materialized. So I just want to make sure people know what we're talking about.
Correct. So, again, while we had had a task force that looked at opportunities in Old Town, Chinatown, Skidmore, some of which aligned with the urban renewal process, some which more aligns with West Quadrant planning and comprehensive planning, which you all have received a copy of that task force, we had looked at additional properties, but really focused in because of the consensus that we were largely able to find around the table in this process on this one block that everybody's been focused on for a long time. So that's a little bit about the background about where that came from. And with that, we do support the recommendations of the totality of the package that has come forward from the majority of this group. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Marion. Other questions? Thanks. Are there any other committee members that are here? If not, then let's turn to the sign-up sheet. Do we have other folks that want to speak on this item?
I show 9 people signed up.
Okay.
The first 3 are Crystal Ilinski, Melissa, and Marianne Schwab.
Thank you. About this item, please. It's late, so.
Okay, yes. Hi, I'm Crystal Ilinski. I represent 10,000. And it's really funny. Kabu is already playing the audio on the dog attacks on misdemeanors.
So let's talk about this, Crystal, please.
And you're in there. Unfortunately, not your outfit because you look great today. Yeah, so here we are discussing urban renewal again, and I'm really fascinated with the fact that for the PSU decision, the planning was done behind closed doors, and it was an alteration from earlier planning, which the president of PSU was not as thrilled with when he came out of the second decision. He said he liked it more, which made me really suspicious. Like, what? Why are these urban renewal funds used for, well, basically to line certain people's pockets? We need to change the focus. If we're going to continue to have these entities, I'm not really sure I understand why we have them, but it should be to protect the public, to protect the public land, our environment, cleaning, and housing. And as we heard earlier from the League of Women Voters, housing needs to be a focus. And we continue to be one of the worst state, well, of 2 states that doesn't have a requirement for every new building that has to have low income. So we also tend to give off public land for private interest. I'll use, for example, I used to be a part of the Central East Side committees, and I lived and worked in that area until I got gentrified out. But it was always shocking to me that Washington High School was never opened to the public. It just sat there, a beautiful historic building that has now been given to private interests, while Catholic Charities is forced to tear down one of the best parks around so that they can offer low-income housing. Washington High School is being converted to yuppie condoms, and it's now the private thing. Just as we turned down the Ross Island present from Bob Pamplin, we need to make sure that our green spaces stay within city public land and not change zoning laws just so private industries can say, hey, we want it industrial and we don't want to pay for EPA cleanup. We need to make sure that these areas are clean and accessible and public. On the waterfront, I know from my own experience looking for housing, it is incredibly difficult. Section 8 is almost the, and I will be discussing that later, but it's the aim is to concentrate people in certain areas, and I would like to see that more and more historical and public places stay within the city and not be given out for urban renewal or Mayor Adams, you know, Kenton properties. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Melissa, please.
Hi, my name is Melissa. I'm concerned. I'm a concerned citizen. There is, I read, over about $200 million budget that we want, you all want to use to develop this urban development. I believe it should go towards something more feasible for the people. There are businesses that could be highly affected by the vast homelessness issues. Also with PSU, they get their own funding. They get tuitions. They get people have to pay them back for their loans and student loans and whatnot. So they have their own money that they can pull out of. They do not need the city to be using our money that our taxpayers are paying. I believe there's an emergency at hand for the people standing out in the cold, freezing, disabled, and whatnot, and starving, and the food they're getting is poison. I believe there is a higher issue at hand than schools and whatnot. If we can start with those issues first, then work on to possibly making a plan and promoting a good, solid foundation for a to end the homelessness and to be able to sustain that for with jobs, which I read that there is no jobs going to be available on these issues at all, but so that people could can sustain themselves and feel safe. And also possibly even use some of these funds, if you do get them, to buy muzzles for those police dogs that are biting people.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Ms. Schwab, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hale, City Commissioners. For the record, my name is Marianne Schwab, a retiree living in the inner southeast Sunnyside neighborhood. For as long as my fixed income keeps in step with the ever-increasing city levels, PDC TIF coming through on my annual Multnomah County property taxes. It's getting tougher and tougher. Gentrification is real. My fear is that City Council may not be fully aware of the list of community meetings facing your ONI volunteers and the citizens of Portland in the month of December. Therefore, I ask Council Clerk Carla Morelove to route my calendar to your offices this morning. Why? I recently compared notes with the HAND president, Susan Pierce, who was unable to address a serious concern on the WAMO property, the 166 acres, downzoning to open space. She simply couldn't. She couldn't get it on her agenda because of what all was facing, including listening to the PDC representative, Justin Douglas. Or is it Dustin Douglas? Well,
no, you had it right the first time.
Okay, thank you. The same held true for Kearns, Sunnyside, and Smile. I attended three November meetings, again, trying to address the downzoning of the 1.66 acres facing Southeast Morrison Street, a transit street, to open space. Hold that thought. Today, PDC is seeking to make major revisions to the urban renewal plans in Portland. The total package estimated at $300 million over a 30-year period time frame. It's not clear to me why PDC did not include the Brooklyn Action Corps request to include in the CES Clinton Triangle amendment. Apparently, the PAC board had no way of appealing. At one point, they were going to go from Powell Boulevard down to Holgate and quite a big area. Then it was a half an area and was troublesome to me. All of a sudden, it was off the sheet. We still could not get information. The biggest name and what I find troublesome is when reading where the PDC proposed changes could impact some of the city's biggest names in real estate, including the Goodman family, Jordan Snitzer, and even our own city commissioner, Dan Salzman. I've sent you the link to that article, and I do want to give a Mr. Goodbar to Brad for writing that article. I can't help but wonder why City Council is in such a rush, especially when knowing PDC, PSC, Metro, Multnomah County meetings are held during the workday, and neighborhood associations do not meet in December. We don't have the timeline with your public involvement to even address some of these issues on short notice. To be honest, I'd rather be home piecing doll and teddy bear quilts for the Portland's fire department's toy and joy than pushing back on these fast-tracked items affecting those of us living on fixed incomes. Why am I nervous? I've been here a million times. Anyway, I'm hoping that everyone out in TV land will come to your December 10th meeting, Warner Pacific College. We do not want to disconnect the Mount Tabor reservoirs, and I'm hoping people will show up at Warner Pacific between 6:30 and 8:30. It will be an engaging conversation, and I know we can come to a very good solution in keeping those tanks full. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Marianne. Thank you for the bribe. Commissioner Fish and I are officially corrupted by having eaten this delicious chocolate
right
now.
She knew we had low blood sugar.
That's my fault. I mean, chocolate solves everything.
Much appreciated. We have been here for quite some time.
Yes. Thank you.
I did want to just address your concern about the Brooklyn Action Corps and how they can appeal. This is only the committee's recommendation. So there's a hearing before the Planning Commission, the Planning and Sustainability Commission. There's a hearing before the Portland Development Commission. And then there's the hearing before City Council. So there's three more bites at the apple for anybody who feels like any of this recommendation is not accurate and that they would like some changes.
I was going to ask about that. Could you tell us for the record where and when those meetings are, the 11th and the 17th?
They'll be posted on my website.
I don't have internet. I
know for the Planning and Sustainability Commission, it's been at the 1900 building at 1:30 on the second Tuesdays.
Yeah,
I think when they usually meet.
Yeah, Jillian can probably give you the dates and times.
Yeah, Jillian is.
She's right.
Jillian, could you wave, please?
Yeah, let her. She'll give you the dates and times.
Marianne,
may I address an issue?
No, excuse me, ma'am. Just one sec. It's still her time.
Okay.
Marianne, I'm not going to disagree with you publicly, but I am going to just gently say that while Commissioner Fritz and I appreciated you attending the last Mount Tabor meeting.
I left.
I know. Well, it was disrupted. The second one is once again hosted by the Parks Bureau and focused on options for what happens to reservoirs post-disconnect. So I don't want to mislead people into thinking it's a public forum around the disconnect. Our hands are tied on that. Commissioner Fritz has set up a robust public process to hear from people about what they would like to see post-disconnect with the reservoirs, and so far we've gotten, a pretty good set of recommendations.
I'm anxious to hear the results of your survey.
Good.
That was a quickie, and I'm just curious how many people did respond, because believe me, I let everyone in my contact world know that we had less than 24 hours to get that to you. So.
Well, I got your email on that, too, so thank you.
I believe it was about 800.
Good, good. That's wonderful. Well, thank you for your time, and I know it's tough. You guys have been on the hot seat today.
Thank you. Well, this let the record show, this is not a bribe. It's a public service. You don't want a city council with low blood sugar. Thank you.
It was my little Christmas greeting with warm wishes, everyone. Thank you.
For the record, this is medicinal chocolate.
Yes.
Melissa, do you have something?
Are you sure of that? Read your label on your chocolate. Find out where it came. No, I'm not joking. Find out where it came from to find out if it's organic and if the people were harmed in the making of said chocolate, because there are third world countries where the people are beaten with sweat, tears, and blood to make that chocolate and not paid. There are slaves. So I just want to let you know, to get that chocolate, how much people have paid and suffered to get most of the chocolate that we have today. And I love chocolate.
And this one is from San Francisco, so let's get it. You betcha. And
thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
No offense to you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next three, please.
Our Michelle Munt, Charles Johnson, and Michael Johnson.
Come on up. I see Mr. Johnson. One of the Mr. Johnsons is here.
Let's go with Tasha Harmon.
Okay. I'm going to pass.
Okay, thank you.
It's coming up here for
all right.
Fun of it.
I believe with the last three people we had an amendment that we're going to devote the urban renewal areas to luring Ghirardelli chocolate and maybe Godiva into the city and make sure it's fair trade, worker-protected chocolate. Obviously, the scope of this is long-term work. It's very difficult for citizens to come up and be fully engaged with it, but if you remember some of our other experiences with urban renewal that have made the media, Trader Joe's, Northeast, I'm kind of glad you're politicians. It supposedly means you're sensitive to public sentiment. And in addition to this bureaucratic process, I think there needs to be better engagement with and an overview of, okay, urban renewal is one tool we have that helps a limited, predefined areas, but how much of that your time is that eating up? And there are more important areas of Portland that have more serious economic considerations. The fact that we have these federal interactions with things like urban renewal and, God help us, PDC.us, sometimes distract us from serving the most needy communities and making the best impact on quality of life for all our citizens. So once we get through all this hullabaloo and stuff that's required to keep the federal money flowing right, I hope that you'll revisit the issue of helping the most needy neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Ms. Harmon, I think she's going to pass, so go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales. And
oh, push the little button there.
Push the button. There you go. I'm on. My name is Tasha Harmon. As some of you will remember, as a founding member of the Coalition for a Livable Future and the executive director of the Community Development Network oh so many years ago, I was deeply involved in the negotiations that created the urban renewal area plans for both the River District and North McAdam. And I'm here because I'm deeply concerned by what appears to me to be a move to roll back commitments that the city has made to the urban renewal areas being a central part of the city's affordable housing strategies and many other strategies, frankly. In the River District Urban Renewal Agreement, the City Council recognized the need and the opportunity to break new ground. They mandated that the new mixed-use neighborhoods they'd create by investing massive amounts of public money in the infrastructure required to make that land developable at all, to be a place where people of all income levels could live. That was a courageous decision. It was a stand against business-as-usual gentrification, where new development means glorious opportunities for people with money and rapid displacement for people who don't have money. It was a stand for livable, walkable communities, for a vibrant mix of jobs and housing, where not just high-paid professionals, but also the people who serve you groceries, who pack the boxes in the businesses, who teach your children's preschool classrooms, can also live within a block or two or three of where they work. It was also a stand for a place where your next-door neighbor's elderly parents who'd lived on a fixed income all their lives to make a better life for their kids and who didn't have much retirement income could live, and your brother-in-law who just got back from the war and hasn't got his head together enough to get a job yet. These were important commitments, and the city's fallen short of meeting those goals. The Oregonian estimates that 1,300 units would need to be built to meet the city's stated goals for the River District, Pearl District, and Old Town. Although we don't really know what the income mix is because apparently they stopped getting the reports, you stopped getting the reports in 2007 about the income mix there. The story we're told is that the city's made good on its commitments to use 30% of TIF funds for affordable housing in the River District and that it's not enough to do the job. That's not a surprise. We told you that without inclusionary requirements being put in place, imposed in exchange for the enormous public subsidies being offered to private landowners in the River District, that land prices would rise fast and that it would make it very difficult to meet the public commitments that you'd made. We also told you 15, 20 years ago that you would need to dedicate city-owned property in the district to affordable housing as part of meeting those goals. We knew there would always be plenty of uses for the money. It's always true. And many of them are good uses, but some of them are not so good. Indeed, we're now hearing that the city's planning to sell the city-owned land near Union Station to Hoyt Street Properties for $1.5 million less than the appraised value so they can build office buildings. What does it tell us when one of the richest and most successful landowners and developers in the city says he can't afford to pay market rent, market price, for land to build high-end office space? What does this tell you about the irrationality of assessed value and land prices, and the need to create regulatory structures and tools that are going to make that less irrational. I also understand the city's considering buying land from Hoyt Street Properties to remedy Hoyt Street Properties' failure to meet their contractual obligations to create affordable housing in the River District. And I'm really curious about whether Hoyt Street Properties is going to offer you a $1.5 million reduction in price on that piece of land. In the North McAdam area, the city set very modest housing goals for the first and second phases over the objections of the affordable housing advocates. And I hear that the revised memo is going to go back to the original goals for those areas, which is good. But I'm also not hearing, and we haven't, of course, had a chance to see the revised memo, any of the advocates yet, so we don't know. I'm really unclear about whether that commitment to going back to the original goals is going to extend to moving now to meeting your obligation when we move past 3,000 units, which you have, to have the income profile of North McAdam match the city's income mix as a whole. It's time to get serious. You know as well as I do that affordable housing is going to be a critical issue in this city's future. We do not want to be San Francisco. I know all of you well enough to know that's not what you want, right? In addition to the affordable housing goals, the city has really strong and important goals about lowering its carbon footprint, creating 20-minute walking neighborhoods and transit corridors that concentrate development and increase ridership, eliminating food deserts, reducing the gap in the education achievements between poor people and not poor people. If you're serious about those goals, affordable housing can't be something you do when you have the resources to do it. You can't achieve any of those goals without making affordable housing, a huge diversity of affordable housing, part of every neighborhood in the city. And the URAs are the easiest place to do that. This is not the time to pull back on those commitments. It's the time to start looking hard for new tools and new funding sources and new strategies. And there are a lot of us out here who want to help. But we need you to step up and be leaders around it. I'll be submitting more detailed suggestions about those tools as we move forward. You're also going to hear from many other players in this process around the comprehensive plan and around other strategies. But I would strongly urge you not to accept any amendments to the urban renewal areas that reduce those targets, those commitments that you made about making the URAs a central part of achieving this vision of Portland as a city that's livable for all of its citizens. And it is vital because it has a strong infrastructure of affordable housing, not just affordable housing that happens when we can find the resources. Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to have you back in this chamber.
Yeah, thanks, Tasha. It's good to see you.
In light of Tasha's information, I do want to let you know that citizens will be extremely interested to see if the 39 or 40 lawyers of the city's attorney's office will go head-to-head with Hoyt Property lawyers instead of focusing on appealing Judge Simon's decision. If Hoyt Properties is involved in some shenanigans or failure to meet contractual obligations, we expect the city to litigate for the right of low-income and average-income people. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thanks very much. Next three.
The last two I show are Margaret Bax and Barbara Ross.
Good evening.
This on?
You are
Margaret
on.
Bax, 3435 Northeast 22nd. I'll be really short. I appreciate you guys staying. I know it's been a really tough day. I was the housing policy manager of the Portland Development Commission, when the housing investment strategies were developed in neighborhoods throughout the city. I oversaw that process. We had hundreds of volunteers in every urban renewal area, Lentz, Interstate, as well as North McAdam and River District, et cetera. As a city representative, I told people that all of these goals that we were working on would be maintained, and they would have an opportunity to not only participate in the development of them initially, but also in the monitoring and that we would be looking at putting housing for everyone in each of the areas, particularly the newly developed areas, North McAdam and River District, the big undeveloped areas. So I personally, you know, really struggle when I read that there's discussions about rolling back the goals because we don't have the money, et cetera. And just as a promising commitment that I made to those hundreds of volunteers who were putting their own time, I was getting paid, but they weren't, that trust us, especially in North McAdam. We said, trust us, the money will come later and we'll meet those goals. So that's why, you know, I'm showing up again. Tasha Harmon's showing up again. We've been off doing different things. I've been in Zambia most of the time doing things, but community development there is really interesting. Anyway, we're just here to offer to help, you know, you figure out some way to meet the goals. Don't roll them back. We'll work with you, the communities, and there's, like, really smart people in the city, at PDC, and the community development network out there that... together we can do it. It's going to be hard. It's tough. It always is, you know, moving the freeway from, you know, Mount Hood freeway and all these things. They're tough. City can do it. But you guys are smart, creative, effective leaders. And I think if you work with all of us that we can meet the goals and really make this a city that is inclusive to everyone. Sorry, I nattered too long. I apologize. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your advocacy. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Barbara Ross, and I'm here testifying as an individual, not on behalf of any organization. I love Portland. I've been here 3 years, and I just think it's a wonderful place, and I love public transportation. I love the open space. I love the parks. And so I think we have a lot to be proud of here, and I really appreciate the thoughtful approach that the mayor and the PDC have taken and as they looked at these changes to the urban renewal plans. And so there's a lot of good concepts in here. I have just two things that I am concerned about. One is rolling back the goals. And Commissioner Fish has said, well, we're not going to roll back the goals, but I haven't seen anything in print that said that yet. So I'm really hoping that as you guys work on this, that you will maintain the goals that they originally made commitment to. It isn't easy. It is never easy to put together funding packages for affordable housing. It's difficult, but that doesn't mean that we should abandon it just because it's hard. Because the need for housing is urgent, and if you think that putting together complex packages for housing is hard, just think how hard it is to live with your kids in a car on the street of Portland. That's hard too. And I know you know that. The other issue is that I'm opposed to is the extension of the Central East Side by another 5 years. It's already been expanded 12 years. This, when you start these things, you say, well, we're going to do this for 20 years. We're going to get rid of the blight. We're going to improve property values. We're going to put those back on the rolls and give the taxing districts their an increased value. But you know, then you extend it for 12 years, then you extend it for another 5 years. And so why should they believe you the next time you want to have an urban renewal district if we just have an open-ended way to fund cute new projects? There's always things that are important that are good to be done. But I think that this extension, the research shows that the taxing districts just don't get their money back if you keep extending it. Right now, I think there's a lot of interest in problems of homeless and housing. There's a lot of people talking about it. The governor is trying to put $100 million in his new budget. The Human Rights Coalition had a great forum a couple of weeks ago. You know, the New City Initiative, where churches are working together, this Welcome Home Coalition. We've got a lot of people who care about this, and I know you all care about it. And so I think it's really important that we... that as you work on the urban renewal district, you have affordable housing as one of the top things that you're looking at as you consider these changes. And then as you go on, looking for better ways to fund these things that are going to work for Portland. So thanks for this opportunity to testify, and thank you for staying so late in the day when you'd like to be taking a nap.
Barbara, can I just respond to one
thing
you made?
Uh-huh.
So I I was speaking for myself when I said we would not roll back. Well, but I will be asking the council when the amendments come back for council consideration to reaffirm the goals, the existing goals, and to make that part of our consideration. And I, on some level, welcome the clarity that the Housing Bureau will bring to the challenges, because we've heard from a lot of people here today who said there are going to be challenges. But let me just offer this optimistic note at the end of a long day. When I was elected, and in fact had the good fortune of working with this Margaret and soon another Margaret on housing issues, we had a commitment to build affordable housing in South Waterfront. And I can tell you that in the first couple of years of looking at that project, there was absolutely no way that Block 49 could come together. And two of the smartest people I know, along with others, considered every single option under the sun, including something called City Lights that I'd never even heard of. And they kept being told that they couldn't get there, there was a roadblock. And then, by the way, we were in the worst recession in our lifetime. The tax credit market collapsed, which meant that that financing tool became less effective. And I won't bore you with the details, but there is a magnificent award-winning development at Block 49 today called Gray's Landing.
Yes.
Named for a distinguished war veteran who also happened to be a developer, but who carries the Silver Star. And that project was built despite all the obstacles because the housing community would not accept no for an answer. And the smartest and most resourceful people I know said, we are going to make it happen. And so when we come back on this package, I will ask council to reaffirm the goals, the existing goals in North McAdam, and I will also ask the Housing Bureau to give the council a roadmap as to what the specific obstacles are to getting to those goals and what additional resources over what particular period of time they're going to need to get there. Because I agree with you. None of this happens without setting a reach goal. And then the only way we get to that goal is if we're willing to throw the kitchen sink at the challenge.
Yes.
And that's how we built light rail. That's how we developed a livable city. That's how we met some of our affordable housing goals. And it is not time for this council to retreat from that tradition.
Thank you very much. That's a great benediction to the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay,
staff, anyone else?
For 1 second.
You want staff back?
Just for a second.
Jillian, would you come back? Maybe PDC staff as well, if you need reinforcements.
Jillian, I have a couple of just very basic questions, and you probably answered it at the front end, but my head is, I'm just feeling a little fried, so forgive me.
Yeah.
Could you tell us what the next events are on this matter?
Yes. The next events are a hearing in front of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and then a hearing in front of the Portland Development Commission Board. Those recommendations will then come forward to you along with ordinances for your consideration on December 17th.
So it comes to us on December 17th.
I just need to make a correction, Commissioner Fish, because I said earlier that the Planning Commission meeting was at 1:30. It's actually at 12:30. On December 9th, and at the 1900 Southwest 4th Building. The PDC board meeting is December 11th from 3 to 5 at 222 Northwest 5th, and the City Council hearing is here on the 17th starting at 2 o'clock.
Yes.
So, Jillian, today we're accepting a report, and we're getting the testimony. December 17th is the first reading?
Correct.
So any amendments that Council wants to bring, we would bring on that day?
Correct.
And any further questions that we might have?
Or like the ideas could come out, and then we could come back with amendments, however the council chooses to.
That's actually my preferred way, so that you have a chance to tell us whether they're workable or not. And because of the hour, I'm not going to go through some of the suggestions that we've had from the public, but what I will be asking you following this hearing, what your views are on some of the ideas that have been floated. Are they feasible? Is it something you and the mayor would support or not, or why? We don't have to spend half an hour doing that now, but the opportunity would be to bring amendments on the 17th.
Correct.
So, thank you.
And we'll be voting on it sometime in January. Is that correct?
The 7th is the current schedule, unless amendments were
you know, required some additional outreach or work that couldn't be accomplished in that period.
One last comment. This is a complicated matter. There's a lot of moving pieces. And there's a couple issues that I'll want to drill down on, but to the three of you at almost 6 o'clock, at the end of a long day, thanks for your good work, because I think you helped set it up and frame it. I think the testimony has been very helpful, and I think there may be some issues council want to pursue, and we'll continue those conversations and then have something ready before the 17th.
Thank you.
Great. Other questions for staff? If not, then we have a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.